Hello, it's Anthony Chadwick from the Webinar Vet, welcoming you to another episode of Vet Chat, the UK's number one veterinary podcast. And I'm really pleased to have Maite Pardo on the line today, who is a veterinary surgeon, originally graduated from Zaragoza in Spain, and is now working in Margate in Kent as a ambulatory vet with Vet to You. But we're also going to be talking about a number of other topics as well. Maite has a keen interest in sustainability, which is obviously a big interest of mine as well. So we're going to be talking about that. But first of all, Maite, great to have you on the podcast, and thanks for taking time to speak to me.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Maite, tell us a little bit about what made you become a vet, and tell us maybe a little bit about the history since you've qualified as well.
So I don't really remember why I decided to become a vet. I have asked my mum about it, and she said that since I was very, very young, I just wanted to be a vet. But then my sister was the one that started being a vet before me. So she started university 5 years before. And then I just follow her, basically. But yeah, I had animals all my life. So I grew up with dogs. And then since I was 11, I had cats, and I've been living with cats ever since. So it's mostly small animals that I was passionate about. And then after I finished my degree in Spain, I worked for a couple of years in Spain. I was doing emergencies mostly. I decided I wanted to do a little bit more further training and move to the UK to do a couple of internships first, and a little bit of charity work. And now I am a vet to you, being in quite a cool job, being a mobile vet. Yeah, that's my career.
Brilliant.
Summarize.
I was similar to you, and I think a lot of vets have this same story of just wanting to be a vet from a very early age. And I'm looking at now, we've got the birds on the bird table, and actually, and the feeders. And it was a sparrow that is my first memory that my friend accidentally killed on the playground. And I thought, well, had I been a vet, I might have been able to save it. And it just stayed as a sort of, as a theme, as I think you said as well, you just always wanted to be a vet, and just very fortunate to being able to do it as well. But maybe tell us a bit about how does the job work with Vet to You? That's ambulatory. So what sort of things are you doing in the job when you're traveling around to different people's houses and so on?
So it's very interesting. So we work in the Thanet area, which is a part of Kent. It's the coastal part of Kent. So we cover quite a few postcodes, and I would say probably around 15 square miles that we cover with the vans. We have three vans, and we do vet consults in one of the vans. So we do everything that you can think of in a normal small animal setting. And we have nurse consults as well. So one of our nurses goes around as well doing weight clinics and some sort of injectables that she can do. And then we have the operating van, which is the one that I use the most, and which is a converted van into a theater. So we plug the van into the mains of the client's house, and then we can do all sorts of surgeries, radiographs, dentals. I would say mostly everything apart from fancy surgery, because we don't have the training for it. But I'm doing my certificate in surgery, so I do quite a lot of soft tissue surgery in there. And it works very well because the animal is quieter, is calmer. They don't realize what is going on up until we are injecting them with something, or they see the stethoscope. And you can build quite a good relationship with clients as well, because there's less pressure on time. So we do less number of procedures or consults. So you can build quite a very good knowledge about the client, about the animal, the lifestyles. So it works very, very well. I really like my job.
So fantastic. So the van is all kind of plugged in to do surgery and things. So you've got the whole sort of setup within the van. And I saw a picture, I think, on LinkedIn. It's like a transit van, or of that sort of size.
Yeah, so the theatre one is I think it's a transit, yeah. It's quite a large one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had the pleasure to drive it, and sometimes feels a bit scary.
And so just in the Kent area, in that Thanet area that you're traveling around, how many clients do you would you see in a standard week, roughly?
Oof, in a week, I'm not sure, in between the three of us. So we see around 12 to 14 consults a day. I do 2 to 3 procedures a day. And the nurse will see at least 7 consults as well. So because it's 3 bands going every day, it's quite a lot of people in a week.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think ambulatory is becoming more and more popular, isn't it?
Yeah.
You do hear, you know, in other countries as well, I think in America, Australia, that ambulatory is, it's definitely answering a need of people who perhaps don't want to take their animals to the vets, that it makes life easier for them, doesn't it?
Yeah, in Spain, where I grew up, there's now a converted ambulance. And the person that started, the vet that started it, is mostly doing it because there's a rural area very close to the Pyrenees that is very difficult to have access to vets. So she's covering all that area. So yeah, it's just getting, you see more and more happening, absolutely.
Fantastic. What kind of drew me to you, Maite, was seeing, you know, obviously you're a vet, you know, we met on LinkedIn, but obviously also very involved with Greenpeace. So how did the sustainability interest develop? Was that something that came from being a vet? Was that a long-term interest, or has that come later?
That came quite late, if you, in the grand scheme of things. I started, my interest started in 2020, in January. I was just doing a little bit of charity shopping in London, and I found this book called How to Give Up Plastic from Will McCallum. And it was reading that book where something switched in my brain, and I was like, wow, I got everything wrong in my life. Like, it was like obsessed of going shopping and buying new things and buying new clothes. And suddenly I started thinking about the impact I was having in the environment. And funny enough, William McCallum is part of Greenpeace. So one of the things I did was to start looking a little bit more into what Greenpeace was doing at that time and how to be part of it. So I became part of the local group, which is quite easy. You just found some group locals, there are many of them in the country, and you start joining them for activities. So they do a lot of like public information. So they put the stalls in the streets and they talk to people about environmental impact that we have, mostly ocean, plastics and forests. They do quite a lot of litter pickings as well, which I'm quite passionate about. And now, for example, what I do, because we don't have a local Greenpeace in Thanet, I'm a Greenpeace speaker. So people can contact Greenpeace and request one of us to come and talk to them. So it can be from schools, it can be from community groups, from universities, colleges. My favorite one is care homes, because I found elderly people, they engage very, very nicely with what I tell them. So it's quite a nice way of contributing, because I think one of the main things that you can do in this battle in trying to be more sustainable and trying to create a better planet is talk about it and make more people aware of the problem. And that's why I think being part of the Greenpeace speaker scheme has made me more able to have that shadow and spheres of interest and shadow that people will learn from me and change. And the more I talk about it, the more people ask me more questions, like even at work. Yesterday we were doing surgery, and as we were doing surgery, one of the nurses was like, oh, by the way, what do you use instead of cling film in your kitchen? Because I'm trying to get rid of it. It's bad plastic, isn't it? And it's just random conversation, and they know who to ask.
yeah, you're passionate about it. And I suppose, you know, it's interesting. You always had that light bulb moment and starting to then change how you were doing things. And often that's the biggest impact, isn't it? Because talk is cheap. It's very easy to, you know, talk a good story. But actually changing the way that you do things. We've just had a new kitchen fitted. We've managed to recycle all the old components to other people, you know, the oven, even the carcasses of the kitchen. and then bought, and it took some effort to go to somewhere where, you know, all of the kitchen is FSC, which is Forestry Stewardship Commission. Yeah. You go into some shops selling kitchens and they don't know what FSC is, which is remarkable, really. But the more you chat about it, the more you request things, I think companies are getting better, but it's perhaps just taking longer than is ideal. What are the sort of maybe two or three things that you've done yourself personally in your personal life that you've changed how you've done things? So, you know, presumably things like you're not using cling film now, but maybe a couple more of those.
I think the main one that I was doing, and I wasn't conscious about the impact of it, was buying new clothes. I was, like I said, obsessed. I wasn't particularly fashion, I think. I was just obsessed with buying clothes. It was sort of my hobby. If I was getting very anxious, I was just going shopping. And since 2020, I just don't buy any new clothes apart from jean clothes and maybe the scrap tops and underwear. So things that you shouldn't buy secondhand, basically. But all the rest of my clothes are secondhand. And I mean, it's cheaper as well, so it's great. But, you know, it's good for the environment. And it's just thinking as well, like, do I really need this thing? Or I'm just like, it's like a comfort buying what I'm doing. So that was my biggest change, I think. My second biggest change was to avoid as much as I could flying and using a car, which is very difficult because being Spanish, I try to go to Spain to see my family relatively often. But I have managed to do it successfully a few times now to go by train. So I take the Eurostar to Paris, and then I take quite a long train from Paris to Hendaya, which is at the border with Spain. And then someone will pick me up at the border, which is by car, unfortunately. But to be fair, if I fly to Spain, they also need to pick me up from the airport. So it's the same distance in kilometers.
Yeah.
And when I'm in England, I try to travel by train as much as I can. And I commute to work for the past 4 or 5 years now, either by bicycle or walking. So at the moment, I cycle to work because it's like 20-minute cycle now. But I cycle every day, regardless of the weather, which is, difficult sometimes.
Yeah, especially when it's wet.
Did you know the webinar Virtual Veterinary Week Congress is back for 2024. Starting on the 5th of February, we have 10 hours of continuing education with speakers such as Sarah Heath, John Chissie, and Samantha Taylor, and many, many more. We'd love to see you there. If you'd like to get involved again this year, or if you'd like to join us for the very first time, please click the link in the description below to find out more.
Yeah, I find, you know, the plane thing is difficult because also we're looking as a company to, you know, expand into America. So I'm going to be at VMX, but I really do try to think about it, you know, before we jump on a plane. The difficulty at the moment now, the state of English trains compared with Spanish or French trains is quite problematic. Got to go down to London. I'm taking the Eurostar to Belgium this week. So I try and use trains as much as possible as well. But actually the trains in the UK are on strike from Liverpool to London. So this is part of a problem of where government needs to step in and actually run an efficient train system. Because when I go to France, Spain, Belgium, Holland, the trains are just so much more reliable than they are here. So we can do so much. And I don't like to kind of expect stuff from government because, you know, government can be slow in the way that they act. This particular government is not particularly green either. So that is, I think, where presumably Greenpeace comes in and trying to encourage governments and big business to move quicker. So obviously you're giving talks and things. Is there, and we know Greenpeace has been activists who climb up big chimneys and go out and stop whaling happening. So really important direct action, which I on the whole would support. I think we need a mixture of things. So some of it is like our Veterinary Green Discussion Forum to bring people together to iron out differences and do that in a more diplomatic and less binary way. But Greenpeace has been so successful over the years. Have you climbed any big chimneys lately, Marita?
No, I don't do direct actions because being a foreigner has the downside that you can get in a lot of trouble if the police decided that you're doing something very illegal. And so I do non-direct ones.
Yeah.
I'm the one that sends all the emails to the MPs all the time, which some people think they don't work. But we have a success story from this year, which was that we managed to get the 30 by 30. So it was our ocean protection campaign, yeah. And we were asking to have 30% of the oceans protected by 2030. And that has been now accepted. And that was an online campaign. It was people sending emails to the government representatives. Yeah. And funny enough that you talk about the current government and being greener, our campaigning, the one that we are focusing now, the whole of us in Greenpeace are just working on this one, is called Climate Voter. So we are asking people to ask the politicians, regardless of from where are they coming from or which party, to step up in the climate agenda, and all of them to provide for the next election the best that they can in terms of climate agenda, and to know that there will be a lot of people making them accountable for what is going to be on offer. I'm not saying that we are going to all vote for a party. It's going to be that we are all going to vote with the climate in mind more than anything else. So yeah, we're asking 1 billion people to be a climate voter and to tell their politicians that they will vote only with someone that has the climate in their minds, and if they don't, they will vote someone else.
Yeah, I think it's really important, and the High Seas Treaty is just a really good example of that, the 30 by 30, which has been talked about a lot by all the NGOs as well. Obviously at the UN conference in Montreal in December, and it's so satisfying to see it going into law. Of course, the next stage is to make sure it's policed and that it is actually upheld, which is sometimes a more challenging piece. We're obviously having the COP conference in Abu Dhabi at the moment, or Dubai, I think it's Abu Dhabi. And the president of the COP is the CEO of a very large petroleum company. So that will be one for us to watch, I think, to see how that develops. My first reading of it was that they were planning to increase oil production, which, I'm not quite sure how that one works if you're president of a COP.
Yeah, and the fact that all our representatives took private jets to go there as well, it was very, very disappointing. It's just, there was a new report coming into the news this morning. I was reading about it, that our goal was to get to 1.5 degrees maximum by the end of the century, and we are already on 2.5. So we are really, really running out of time. And personally, I have very, very, very little hopes with COP28 this year. I'm just like a bit, not sure if it's going to happen.
Yeah, I was at COP26, which was in Glasgow, and I took the train and the bus to where I was going. And of course, our Prime Minister at the time, who I think espoused green values, but still, I think, flew back down from the conference in a private jet. It does, the actions, I think it was St. Francis of Assisi said, preach all the time, use words occasionally. The actions do really speak louder than words, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. And I know it's difficult sometimes not to fly. I'm the first one that I'm not perfect. I will never be perfect. And that's one thing that, as well, in my sustainability journey, I do advocate a lot for the sustainable ish, which is, if you haven't read the book from Jane Gale, is definitely on my pile of books to read. Because she's also a vet. And is that trying to be the best that you can and to do it by example. Yeah. So if you try to be your best and people around you will see you and will be like, oh, well, they are doing very well. And politicians and people, famous people, should be the first ones being like, well, people see me and they took me as an example. Maybe I should do better. Especially if our team is meant to be someone very environmentally friendly, maybe he should have lived by example.
Yeah. I think it's, it's interesting you were using the example there that, you know, you're not perfect. I certainly am not perfect as well. But I think sometimes also there's a fear of starting on the journey because it just looks so complex that, you know, why do we even bother starting? So actually those single steps, you know, not using cling film, buying less clothes, than you need, and not going for fast fashion. They're all steps, and similarly with the veterinary journey, you know, trying to use low flow anesthetics, reducing the amount of plastic that we use. I know Zoe Halfacre has talked about in a paper that 9% of medical plastic is recycled. So actually the first thing is reduce the amount we're using.
Absolutely.
If you can reuse it. So, you know, I know in the NHS, a lot of endotracheal tubes are used once and then thrown away, know that they can be or degraded and so on. And then finally, the last part, you know, if we are recycling, let's do better, but actually let's try and actually reduce the amount. And I know when we did this, Zoe was talking about the steel tins that you can autoclave instruments in. They're obviously more expensive to buy. You autoclave, so there's a cost in energy. But, the frightening stats where there'll be more plastic in the ocean by 2050 than fish is something we have to prevent, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And it's something, unfortunately, here in Margaret, we see a lot of... When it's the high season, so during the summer, we do litter picks all year around here. And during the summer, you see the litter that people have drop in the beach at the moment when it's happening. But then during the winter, we do see quite a lot of things that they come with the tides. And it's very sad because, you know, that has come from the ocean. And it's that thought of, wow, where is this traveling from? There's so many like fish nets as well that we get here.
Yeah. I similarly live at the beach as well, but in the other side, on the west side, north of Liverpool city centre. And similarly, you know, going down and seeing the beach, often just thoughtlessness, you know, a Coke can gets thrown on the floor or a bottle of beer or whatever. And, you know, that plastic will take centuries to decompose, won't it? So.
Yeah.
I must admit, I always try and go down with a bag and pick up or put some stuff into the bin. And, you know, even one or two things, it makes a difference,
doesn't it?
I think this is the way it makes us feel better, but hopefully it makes other people more hopeful if just those little actions, if everybody does them, they add up to a big action, don't they?
They do. And I have the feeling of community. So every time I go with a group that I volunteer for, and I sometimes go on my own. And I just found every time I go, someone would say thank you every time. People acknowledge that you're doing something for everyone. And it's that sense of community as well. When you see another people doing it on the other corner, like, wow, I'm not alone. The sense of community, I think, is very important.
And, you know, again, it starts conversations because you're doing an action so people can see that you're doing something very practical. And then off the back of that, it's, oh, isn't it terrible that this is happening? Yes, especially plastic because it lasts so long. And people change as well, don't they? And maybe then next time they bring a plastic, a bag to pick up things, maybe not a plastic bag, but it's often it is
a bag
to sort of take.
It's a starter.
Yeah, and obviously you've done such great work with Greenpeace, with the beach cleans. We do some of them at Webinar Vets when we come down and do some beach cleaning as well. But I know also you're very involved with Vet Sustain, which obviously we enjoy working with as well, with the sustainability summits and the Green Discussion Forum. How long have you been involved with that Sustain, and what are you doing with them?
So I think I started a couple of years ago, three years ago actually, when I moved to Margate is when I started getting more involved. For the last, I think it's been a year and a half, I coordinate the Champions Group. So the Champions Group is a small group. We are like 20 to 30 people. So we are from every little background, I would say. We have people that are in university, people that are large animals, small animals, wildlife, that they are very, very passionate about sustainability in veterinary medicine. So we have every 6 months a meeting in which we will discuss things that we have been doing, try to get a little bit of accountability of things that we are trying to implement in our own practices, but also like bring topics that they are of interest. So in the last one, we talk about how to be more knowledgeable in sustainability. So different type of courses that you can do to learn more, like, for example, being a carbon literate, which is happening now with the Sustain as well, which is quite a good course, if I can say. But also like being more involved with the carbon calculator or doing the masters for the environment. So those sort of things that you could do as an educational purpose. The next one is going to be on parasiticides, because we all know that we are overusing them. And with the new RCDS legislation, we also need to be more careful in prescribing them. So it's just bringing people together and again having that type of community in which we can all talk freely, especially of the difficulties of trying to be more sustainable in clinical practice, and try to like help each other out mostly.
I think that peer group dynamic is really important. You know, we see at the Veterinary Green Discussion Forum that people go away enthused because they can see they're not the only person that's interested in this, but actually there's another 40, 50 people working in different companies. And then, of course, the conversations go on post-event where relationships develop and people can talk about the good things that they're doing and ask for help as well. So it's really powerful. And, you know, Vet Sustain has done so much. And, of course, Laura was joint winner of our first, Laura Heim, of the Veterinary Green Awards, which are going to be announced again. We're going to announce those in, I think it's early February at the Veterinary, at the Virtual Congress 2024. So we're hoping to get lots of entries. So if you are listening and you're doing some cool sustainability stuff, then please do look out for those awards as well. Maite, it's been great speaking to you. I always love speaking to passionate people about the environment. We can all have our ups and downs about this. On the whole, I'm a man of hope. But then, as you say, if you go down to the beach and see a load of rubbish, it does make me quite sad. So it's always good to have positive people like yourself around to keep the spirits up. So thank you for everything that you're doing and you know, for taking time to have a conversation with me today.
Well, thank you very much for having me. And yeah, if anyone wants to reach me, I am Sustainable Vet in Instagram, and I'm always open for any chat or advice.
That's great. Yeah, we'll definitely put the website and the email in the notes below the podcast or the podcast so that people can get in contact. But thank you for all that you're doing. Really appreciate it, Maite.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. You know how passionate we are at the Webinar Vet about sustainability. Do start on the journey. But if you need any advice, Maite is a great person to go and speak to. So thanks for listening. This has been Vet Chat, the UK's number one veterinary podcast. Hope to see you on a podcast or a webinar very soon. Take care.